Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to Season 5, Episode 1. This is Redemption Part 2. It was directed by David Carson, written by Ronald D. Moore, and it aired back on September 23, 1991. This is the second part in the finale of the Redemption storyline. The Klingon Civil War is going. Data gets to command a starship, and Starfleet tries to figure out if the Romulans are involved in some kind of supply scheme with the Duras family. Clay is here to talk about this one. So right after this, me and Clay are going to kick off Season 5 with a discussion of Redemption Part 2.
You drink with our enemies?
How many are Garins, then? How many are Duras? Does it matter? When we meet in battle, we will fight to the death. But here, we're all warriors, all Klingons.
The repairs to the Hektar are proceeding. The port stabilizer...
Is there nothing in your heart but duty?
It is my responsibility.
We all have responsibilities and duties. But you and I are warriors fighting in a great war. Think of it. You and I will fight battles that others can only dream of. The time for glory is here. It is not a time to worry about stabilizers. It is a time to celebrate. For tomorrow, we all may die. Come, let us, the sons of Maul, live this night as if it were our last.
So here we are, Clay. Season 5.
Yeah.
We're ready to go. Our enthusiasm is at an all-time high.
Episode 500.
That's this is episode. It's either 100 or 101. I think it's 101. So we're past the century.
It's old syndication episode. So I can only assume they've done 500 episodes.
Oh, true. Yeah. I mean, we have to include the original series and everything like that. But anyway, we're talking about Redemption Part 2, which is the climax of Redemption Part 1, which ended the fourth season, obviously.
And also my favorite Queensryche song.
Yeah, it's a good title. You could really... it's like I could see a death metal album named this, and I could also see the next Adele album named like Redemption. I'm gonna say something quick, and then I'll fire it off to you.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this episode and found it immensely frustrating at the same time.
Okay. My turn?
Yes.
I thought this episode was great.
Sure.
I really liked it a lot, and I thought that it was probably the most successful they've been at having multiple plot lines going at once.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's because there was more than two or what, but for some reason, everything they did just clicked for me. I thought it was really well. I thought it was really good, and I think it was better than the first half.
Yes, I agree. I thought you were going to go and say this was one of the few examples you can think of a two-parter where the second half is better than the first half. I think I think this one definitely fits that. I certainly enjoyed watching this one a lot more. In terms of your storyline comment, the reason I find it frustrating is because I feel they took three storylines that probably deserve their own episode and shoved them together.
Yeah, we'll have something to talk about there because I was thinking about that and I honestly couldn't decide whether or not I felt like they deserve... I mean, I guess technically they could. If you're going by stuff that they've done in the show before that has gotten an entire episode out of it, then yes. But I don't know. I mean, okay, so we can talk about that when we get to it.
Sure. So, I mean, the general breakdown here is that I was kind of surprised that this is really the final episode arc in the Worf-Klingon story, sort of. Unless there's something that they do afterwards that I'm not remembering, I'm surprised that it came fairly early in the series run. But that storyline is pretty much resolved at this point.
So does that mean that I've somehow managed to miss every episode featuring his son?
Well, but his son is outside of the regaining honor, I think.
Right?
Like,
the son is just kind of there at this point, but he's gonna make his triumphant return. But I think I'm talking more about the fact that this episode ends with Worf sort of rejecting the need to regain his honor in a certain
right.
sense.
Right.
And I think one. Okay, I wanted to start this off with by saying that I watched the Blu-ray for this has a trailer for these episodes because Redemption was released as like a standalone DVD release, both parts. So they cut a trailer for it, and the trailer is awesome, which is kind of stupid to say because the trailer's job is to make whatever you're going to watch seem awesome. Like if you have a bad trailer, that's a really bad job. But I was surprised by how they sold this Redemption story, and I thought that the trailer made it seem much more epic than it actually comes out in the end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Klingon Civil War storyline kind of ends very abruptly, and I feel like you don't get... There's not as much Worf in this episode as I thought there should have been, in a way, because he's the central plot arc.
Yeah, I agree. I think it kind of... It piggybacks on what I said last time about how I feel like the part one should have been a two-parter itself.
Right.
I will agree with you that if there's anything that should have been its own story, it's that. I think you could have done a three-part, you know, basically TV movies worth of episodes just about Worf getting his honor back and reconciling his lineage and all that kind of stuff. And it does – the way they wrap it up quickly in the last episode, they do even less with it in this one, which feels weird because it is such a big point of the whole story.
Yeah. He spends a lot of time just sort of – like all the things that I'd want him to do are there. Like he disagrees with Kern, you know, about yep. – like he comes into conflict about like the Klingons are sort of like party animals who have a bizarre sense of honor compared to what Worf has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so he sort of chafes under Kern. They have that scene. They have the final scene where he refuses to kill Toril, which I was completely wrong about in the other episode where I screwed up where Toril comes from. There's no cloning whatsoever with him. He's just legitimately Duras's son.
Sounds like we got a peek into Wes's fan fiction archive.
I was confusing my spec script with what actually happens. And I feel like all the beats are there. It's just not... Worf is so, like, secondary. Like, he doesn't have an active role in anything. He kind of just...
No, he really doesn't.
He's just there. And then he gets beat up and then captured by the Duras sisters, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, he's almost even, like, tertiary. Like, he's sort of... Yeah, he's just sort of there. He's not... That whole Klingon thing does take a back seat to... the stuff with, what's her name, Sela?
Sela, yeah.
Sela and Picard and the Data stuff.
Yep.
And all that kind of stuff is sort of at the forefront, which is fine with me because that stuff was more interesting to me anyway. But
yeah.
I don't. But again, I don't know if that's a result of the fact that they didn't give the Klingon stuff the time it needed.
Right.
But yeah, it's strange because... I feel like it. I totally agree with you that they didn't give it enough time, but I also feel like it works in the episode. Yeah, given that they spend so little time on everything, like
yes.
they kind of give you like chunks of story that I think would be this. My enjoyment of this episode might be a result of watching so much modern television because I feel like the way that this episode is plotted out is very modern in that they kind of giving you bits and pieces of stuff that could be used later.
Yes.
And
it's also very dense. Like, yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on here, which feels weird because of the episodes we've seen previously where maybe that's where I'm coming from. It feels like you could have stretched out each of these storylines into it would be more simple, but it would be more focused, which is kind of what the episodes have been doing previous to this.
Right.
This
right.
one.
Well, I was just going to say focus-wise, though, I don't know, because I feel like the fact that they are so short, maybe I'm just thinking about I think the Data thing is the best thing in this episode. I'm just going to say it right now.
I also I agree with that. I also think it's the least well done in a way.
Like, yeah. I would agree with you.
I feel it could have been done... So it's so rapid, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So, I mean, continuing with what you were saying, it's just sort of there's a lot going on, and it's the kind of storytelling where as I was sitting down and watching it, I was like, oh, wow, this is, like, really great. And then after I started to think about it, it was like, ooh, like, there's a lot of things you could change about that. I still like this episode a lot. It just, it feels weird to me that they packed everything so together. I mean, we've talked about Worf's redemption storyline. Let's talk a little bit about the Sela storyline.
Oh, before we get into that.
Sure.
Did you find anything weird, just, I don't know, about that? It's the first scene where Tony Todd flies the ship into the sun and then uses the sun as a weapon?
Yes.
That was kind of weird. Is that just something they know how to do? Or is it...
Right. Or you'd think that the other ships, why would they follow them into the sun?
If that's a maneuver people know, you'd think, oh, he's going into the sun. Maybe we don't follow him.
It's such a that's such a season one opening scene kind of scene. You know, it's like it opens with this ship, a new shot we've never seen before of a ship flying, being attacked by two other ships, which is always a budget buster for these shows. You know, it's kind of pointless in the long run. It just is kind of like, hey, we have all this new budget. Let's do a really great opening sequence.
Right.
I don't even think it's that great of an opening sequence because
it's kind of.
The Klingons continue to, despite all the proclamations about being great, like, warriors and tacticians, they seem horribly not up to task whenever they're under attack.
That's a bit of a extension of something else that I noticed in this episode, that the Klingons as... I feel like they don't make a lot of sense when you really break them apart. As far as like like on the surface, their whole thing about honor and war and all that kind of stuff makes sense. But I don't. Some of the action in this episode, which it's now I shouldn't have brought it up because now the actual explanations or examples are escaping me. But some things triggered things in my head where it was like, well, there's no way this society would survive ever,
right?
Because it would just collapse in on itself very quickly.
Right. How do they ever get anything done? Basically.
Right. Yeah.
Because they always seem, if they're not fighting, they're sort of drinking and partying and fighting each other in like the worst Roadhouse outtake you could possibly imagine. it's true that they, outside of like the council, which actually seems like it can get stuff done, but even in this one, the council is so prone to distraction. Like if someone just challenges Gowron, it's like, now I have to kill him.
Right.
You know, which is a good scene because it highlights the difference between Worf and the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little bit shitty that Gowron stabbed the guy after Worf. That didn't seem very honorable. You know, if Worf holds him back and he just stabs him, that seems a little shitty. I think you're right, though. The Klingons, the more you look at them, they make a little bit less sense, just in terms of what the show wants to show you that they're doing in their off time.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I doubt that when they were doing the stuff they ever expected 25 years later, someone would be dissecting it on a podcast.
Yep.
But you know, I think it definitely works for what it needs to do.
Right.
But yeah, it's just interesting. You know, it's just some of those things that just sort of don't link together exactly the way you think they should.
Right. Or I sort of had the thing after having watched so much, I kind of in my head, I think I've created depth that isn't really there just in terms of what the show is actually telling you. So I think I'm kind of a victim of that sometimes too.
And that scene at the beginning is also another example of Star Trek's concept of how things relate in space.
Yes.
Because there's no reason that those ships should have been so close to each other.
There's no reason scientifically, right? There's no reason that in a vacuum, if you move the star would follow you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief to some sort of, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, jet fuel thing. I don't know. I don't know how it works, but whatever. But it's just, I don't know. That sequence is kind of silly.
It's a lot of chasing each other and shooting.
It's interesting. We're going off on a huge tangent here, but it's interesting how they still treat space battles like World War II dogfighting battles.
Yes.
You know? I actually just watched Top Gun again last night, and it really stood out to me after watching that how, oh, they're just shooting this the same way they would have shot this if it was like F-15s or something.
Right. Yeah. It's probably the same people working on both of them and everything. But, you know, let's talk about the Sela plot line, which is the Romulans are sort of backing the Duras in this civil war, and the Federation is trying to prove that the Romulans are involved, and therefore they can get involved in the Civil War, or at least prevent a Romulan Klingon coalition from taking them over. Mm-hmm. So Sela is revealed to be the daughter of Tasha Yar. What did you think about the Sela?
Poor Tasha Yar.
Poor Tasha Yar. What did you think, who has been, in this storyline, in this timeline, she had gone back from yesterday's Enterprise, been at that battle, somehow survived, the Romulans captured her. She was imprisoned by a Romulan general or something, and she bore his child, who is Sela, and then she was executed. So what are your general thoughts about the Sela storyline here?
I love it because I am a huge fan of time travel consequences.
Yep.
Like, the fact that she straight up says, this is all because of you, Picard, is fantastic.
But
because
is that even true?
Well, I mean, it's not true. I mean, he did send her back in time, which then caused her to get captured by the Romulans, and then she had this kid. So technically, if you want to look at it a butterfly effect kind of way, yes.
Yeah, the episode is weird because it was saying that you sent her back when he just sort of let her. I mean, ultimately, it's the same kind of difference, but...
Well, I mean, it's also... He doesn't know
right.
that he did that.
That's the best part of it, yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, she's not lying to him, but she's also stretching the truth.
Yes.
But it made me really sad because I don't know if they just really hate the character of Tasha or what, or if it's just depending on who's running the show. But Tasha's fate goes from complete bullshit, unceremoniously stripped off the show.
In Skin of Evil.
Yeah.
Yep.
To hopeful and triumphant to a certain point, and in yesterday's Enterprise, and then in this one you find out no, it's even darker than you thought it was. not only was she sent back in time, and she did survive the battle, but then she was captured, turned into a concubine,
yep.
and then executed. And she's my mother, and I hate her.
and you never see her. You know, it's also yeah. abstracted. It's like Jesus. Like this is. I think that I sort of agree with you. I love the Sela idea as a concept, but the way it comes through, it feels like it undoes everything that yesterday's Enterprise kind of accomplished.
Yeah. Well, yes and no, because like I said, I do like that. The actions had consequences other than, oh, we fixed the timeline.
Yep.
You know, the fact that, yeah, they did succeed in that mission, but everything after that, you know, is a result of what they did, and it's not all good. I do like that. I do like that they went down that road.
Yeah. Well, I feel it falls into the sort of problem of there's a lot of storylines in here that some of them or all of them can't get as much service as I think they deserve because mm-hmm. In my opinion here, it's sort of weirdly ironically said in the script where there's a moment where Sela is revealed and Picard and Crusher and Troi are having a conversation and he's like, and they're like, maybe she's a, like she's been surgically altered to look like Tasha Yar. And mm-hmm. Picard goes, well, it doesn't even really matter because her being Tasha Yar or not has no impact on what I need to do.
Right.
You know, which is like, if the script, if the idea was thought out a little bit more, there would have been some kind of conflict about this actually being Tasha Yar instead of just coming across as, hey, you know, your decision in the past had some consequences, but they're sort of inconsequential consequences in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's still, she's still using it as a psychological weapon. To you know, get him off of his game. But yeah, as far as the actual, you know, action that's happening, that yeah, it doesn't matter either way.
Right.
You know, if it wasn't her, it could be the guy who's, you know, her second in command. Unless, so, I don't remember, but I don't think that Sela is specifically has any animosity towards the Enterprise specifically.
No, I don't think so.
So if it was more of like a con situation where it was like, yeah, no, we're doing this because we're trying to fuck with you because, you know, you sent them, you know, that kind of connection, then it would be a big deal. But yeah, the fact that it's just sort of a side note is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I actually like that though, because I don't know. I mean, if you gave that its own episode, I don't know. I feel like you would have to add that stuff to it and I find it more interesting that it's a consequence that exists, but isn't necessarily the linchpin of the story, you know?
Right. Right. I think I agree. It seems so. It's more just about the damage it does to yesterday's Enterprise's story. Like, just her sacrifice. Like, it's just, it's almost comical about, like, grand sacrifice goes from that to being imprisoned, raped, and then executed over the course of 4 years. It's like, wow. That seems poor. I mean, as Sean brought up to us on Twitter, it was a Denise Crosby idea to bring back Sela.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think it's a case of the producers should have been a little bit more firm in this somehow. I don't know. I like the storyline. All these storylines. I like the storyline. I just feel like there should have been something else there. I also think it's weird that Yar told her daughter that she was from the future in a weird way.
Yeah. I don't know why she told her that.
She told her a lot of information seems kind of damaging to a four-year-old.
That's really a good point. There's really no reason why she should know that.
Right, yeah. she just has to explain away why she looks exactly like her.
Okay, well, I was going to say I feel like you can still get to the same point if she doesn't know Tasha is from the future. But in order for you to get to that point, someone needs to know Tasha was from the future.
Yeah, so that's the problem, I think.
If Picard knows, then Sela can just tell her backstory, and then it probably works even better because she tells her backstory, but only Picard realizes that, oh, fuck, I did this. This is my fault.
Right.
But, you know, he doesn't remember because he doesn't remember changing the timeline. Guinan remembers, but Guinan only doesn't really elaborate on it.
No, that was a mistake. I would not have had that Guinan scene.
Yeah, that's the scene you have if your whole episode is about that story.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because it feels too much like yesterday's Enterprise, except yesterday's Enterprise, because you were in the past, you were allowed that sort of mystical explanation. Mm-hmm. Where she's in sort of what we consider to be the real timeline, and it's frustratingly vague to a point where I can't understand why Picard even sort of believes what she's talking about.
Yeah.
So I thought that was weird, but I mean, I like that the Romulans sort of get a leader, kind of. Mm-hmm. You know, I like that fact. I like that it's a good characterization for the Romulans. The Romulans seem more open to like sort of interspecies, kind of. They're not quite as racist as you'd imagine the Klingons kind of seem to be sometimes, which I think is a nice difference between them.
Yeah, they're not racist. They'll use whoever they have to accomplish their own goals.
Right. Yes.
You know, they don't they're not prejudiced and they don't discriminate as far as co-enemies go.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's good for the series in general. I mean, I really love the Picard and Sela scene.
Well, you know, it's funny. I really like that scene as well, but something occurred to me later on. The scene where the two Klingon ladies have Worf captured.
Yep.
Sela comes up on the screen and says, "Sorry, dudes, we're out of here," or something. I forget what she says. And Worf is right there.
He says nothing.
Worf should see her and freak the fuck out.
Yes, he should. Or they should have just blocked it so that he couldn't clearly be looking at the screen. It was bizarre.
On the other hand, why isn't there a Worf and Sela story? Because Worf is the one who has the connection to Tasha, why don't they ever cross them over like that? Because you've got Sela who is fighting against the Klingons. You've basically got these two embodiments of Enterprise crew members who are now
out of their elements in
warring factions.
Sure, yeah.
And they're two who were very close to each other, you know, previously, or at least that's what we're told after the fact.
Right.
So I'm surprised that they didn't even bother to do that, because that's kind of an interesting thing to play with.
Yeah. I'd agree. I mean, they mirror each other, and it's bizarre that they don't interact. Although, yeah, it's tough because if you did have the scene where they meet, it's not like they have a lot to talk about, really. You know, true. It's because I don't know if it was. Do you think you can improve this by not having Denise Crosby play Sela? Not as far as terms of acting, just of. Because
does the character remain the same?
Character is exactly the same. She has the blonde hair, but it is not Denise Crosby playing that role.
No. Well, no, unless, I mean, because so much of the explanation of her jumps off from the point of...
Recognition.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, like I said, okay, so if you go back and you have the story where she doesn't, where Picard knows what happens, but she doesn't know what happens. Or you know what I mean, like I said before.
Yep.
Picard can put the pieces together and figure out that her mother is Tasha Yar. But that's a completely different story. I mean, I think in order to tell this the way they tell it, you have to have instant recognition.
Yes. Yeah, I think I agree. And I just, if you wanted to continue this character off, she does make one more appearance, but if you wanted to have more than that, I think maybe a different actress would have been the right decision. But for the curtness of the storytelling, I think you have to go with what we got here.
Yeah, I think so.
So let's talk about Data in Command.
Yes.
Which starts off with a very interesting scene.
Mm-hmm.
This is the this plot line I think most deserved its own episode. For some reason, if you had the senior officers from the Enterprise split off to command a small fleet for some reason, that's a really interesting storyline for all the characters.
Yeah.
Starts off here with Riker gets command of... I also wrote down the note, this is a great episode for other Federation ship names.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I always love the ones where more ships show up.
Yes.
Just because it's always cool to see the different designs. Although I think there's only one shot where you see more than two of them at once.
Yeah, when they're flying off to the thing. It's like the first act break where all the ships are going off.
But it always hits me, I think, because even as a kid, I think I was subconsciously aware that there was never more than one ship on screen at a time.
Yes, yeah.
So when they all showed up, it's like, oh, shit, it's on now.
Well, even in the previous... Best, it certainly makes the universe feel more alive, like if you see other ships. But the only other example I can think where there would be a lot of ships was the Wolf 359 battle in Best of Both Worlds, and you don't see anything except for the remains of the ship, so that's kind of unsatisfying.
Well, my favorite thing about this, and I think they probably do it in other places too, where they cover themselves budget-wise, where they go, we should probably send an entire fleet, and they're like, well... We can't do that because a lot of those ships are not available. Right. We can send you five ships.
Right. And four of them look exactly the same. So that's good for us. Yeah. But it's like the Tiananmen, the Hornet, had some great, great ship names going on. I think Riker's command of the Excalibur.
Yeah.
So LaForge becomes number one, and we get a nice scene of Data sort of lightly bringing up the topic to Picard, who does a great job of realizing that he probably subconsciously is passing Data over.
Can we also mention that LaForge becomes number one and then is not seen for the rest of the episode?
Yeah, that was a little bit. I was disappointed. That's why I think I want this episode to be, or this plot line to be, in a bigger episode, so you can see everybody on their own ships.
Yeah.
So Data gets command of, I forget what the ship name is, but whatever.
The Sutherland.
Sutherland, that's right. And he basically comes. Butts heads with the first officer of that ship.
Well, before we get to that part, I think one of the more interesting aspects of this is that he asks for command.
Yep.
So I wrote down, is this him showing some sort of ambition, or is this a computation that he's made determining that he is more qualified or so? You know what? It's another interesting Data gray area.
What I thought was fascinating is that when he's mentioning this to Picard, he mentions he's been in Starfleet for 26 years.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Which is an incredibly long time, and he's still only a lieutenant commander.
Right.
So is that more Data's lack of ambition, or do you think he's just encountering prejudice the whole way along, or is it some combination of the two things?
It could. Yeah, I'm sure it's probably a combination of the two things. Because, I mean, there's, you know, I believe they've gone out of their way. In one of the episodes that's all about him to talk about that. The one where he's on trial, I think, where they talk about that he doesn't have any ambition,
yep.
And it's one of the things that doesn't make him human. But they've been, you know, they've been giving you enough, I wouldn't say winks, but enough gray areas with him the last couple seasons that he can, they can do something like this, and I think it's a pretty interesting thing to throw in there.
Yeah, I thought the Data storyline was really great for a whole bunch of reasons. Like, technically, I like looking at another ship's bridge. How it's there's only one chair, which is interesting. Like, yeah. it's well, that kind of stuff.
I did notice that they clearly didn't have a lot of money to make the bridge of the Sutherland, because they shoot it from like two angles.
Yes, yeah.
And it's like the size of a men's bathroom.
And when compared to the Enterprise, when people are like looking at the same screen, they're like on top of each other as they're sort of like staring at screens. It's a neat little storyline. So basically, the gist is that Data's being prejudiced against, and we run into the most blatant form of anti-android sentiment that we've come across, I think, because even in Measure of a Man, it wasn't that the scientists actively disliked Data. It was more that he just was like, this is a robot, we should be able to take him apart and do what we want with him.
Right.
This guy actively does not respect whatever Data stands for, and my main gripe with it is I think the storyline hits so quickly where Data's just like, hi, I'm Data, and the guy's like, I fucking hate androids. I request to be transferred. There's like no build to anything, kind of.
Yeah, I see what you mean, but I also kind of like that a little bit. Because, I mean, so if I were to take one thing away from that storyline that I think could have been done differently is you never really get an idea of why this guy doesn't trust Data. It's just that he, unless I am forgetting something, he never really elaborates on.
This is interesting. In the trailer I was talking about earlier for this one, they or it might have just been the next time on Star Trek thing. They're like, Data has to make life or death decisions. They kind of play lip service to that in this episode, but it doesn't come across like it makes any sense. Data wants to do something where the guy is like, you can't do that to those two decks. Like, there's people down there.
Yeah,
but you never get the idea that people are dying because of what Data's doing.
Right.
They're just like, at the end when they fix it, they're like, you know, clean out those decks, irradiate them, and then send all the crew back in. And the guy's like, okay.
Yeah.
There's no, I think the idea was to have Data make a rationally correct decision that would cause harm to some people.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy being like, you're an unfeeling monster. Like, how can you do this?
Right. Well, I mean, like, right off the bat, too, though. When he's straight up, he's like, all right, no, I want to be transferred. They never elaborate on why.
Sure.
He just has an innate hatred or distrust of Data.
Yep.
Which I kind of would change a little bit, but at the same time, I think having this storyline be so short stops them from, you know, doing the thing that you would usually do if that was a whole episode where, oh, you find out this guy has a history with that, and then he tells this long story about how his parents were killed by androids.
Yeah.
Or his father let the android drive the car and it didn't stop at the stop, you know, some bullshit like that.
Right, yep.
I actually kind of really like that this guy just is sort of like, ah, not for me.
Yes,
and he tries to get out, and you know, like you get why he doesn't like him as they start arguing with each other. But which is nice. But I do agree with you that I think it's the stakes that they throw in there are not entirely relatable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Data ultimately solves the problem here. Like he ends the conflict in a sort of it's a fine way. It's a lot of techno babble, but it gets the point across. And the guy grudgingly, the number one officer, just eventually, you know, he shows him a little bit of respect by calling him captain at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
It leads to a nice little scene with Data and Picard at the end where Picard has the nicely done Mr. Data quote.
Right, right.
And I think it's a nice little character arc. It's also it's an episode I think would be prime for a lot of people make the, in my opinion, mistake of thinking Data can feel emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he yells here, I think people see that as like, see, he does feel. Data is copying what he sees people like Picard do in this situation.
Right. It would have been great if he had done the shirt pull when he sat down.
Yes. he gets he nails that, or you know, he just cops does some other thing to. I don't know if they ever have a moment where he sort of uses a Picard phrase or anything like that. I don't think so. I didn't notice it.
Yeah, So that sequence where he's, you know, he goes kind of rogue for a minute. How do you think that's supposed to play? Because I think that's the only problem I have with the Data sequence, is that when it gets to that point, Data just starts repeating orders and not answering the Enterprise at all.
Right.
Instead of like, and I don't, is it supposed to be like, oh, maybe he's gone? I'm not like, I don't know how they were, that's supposed to play.
Yeah, I don't. It feels like it's not an overwhelming amount for Data to manage to let Picard know what's going on.
Yeah, like, or at least answer him in some. Like, I'm sure if he had just said back to him, "I'm in the middle of something. Hold on, I will be able to fix this in a second." Picard, would, oh, okay, yeah, sure, no
right,
problem.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
He trusts Data. He, you know,
he gave him command.
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure how that's supposed to play. In terms of if you're supposed to think Data is gone off the rails or something, or
yeah,
if he,
yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I don't think so. It just, I guess it's just another, I don't think you're supposed to feel that. I think it's just another point of conflict where this guy's like, are you going to answer the phone, basically?
Right.
And it felt a little bit odd. It felt like Data going rogue was not high stakes enough, kind of. Like there was no... It ties into the irradiation of the Dex. It doesn't feel like this has any sort of consequences to what's going on.
Right.
Because the Romulans are going to break through the net, you know, either way. So it's not like Data moving to the orders of Picard is really accomplishing anything. I had a little bit of... The net is one of those ideas that seems great in principle, but when you think about it, it's like, why can't the Romulans just go around it?
Yeah, that's the first thing I was thinking, because when they talked about how they were going to set this thing up, in my head I was like, so are they going to encircle the entire planet with five ships,
right,
or whatever?
Yeah, yep.
Or, yeah, once they set it up, well, why can't they just think fourth dimensionally or whatever, and or three dimensionally even?
Right, I mean, they go faster than light. They can just go around it, you know, in any sort of direction. It's a sort of neat idea just because you get to see the ships, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's another. I think it's just another instance of the understanding of the space they're in is not realistic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But it works for whatever they're doing.
So that's Redemption Part Two. So me and Clay are going to take a break. We're going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back, and we are going to give our final thoughts and ratings for Redemption Part 2.
Kill him.
No.
But it's our way. It's the Klingon way.
I know, but it is not my way. This boy has done me no harm, and I will not kill him for the crimes of his family.
Then it falls to Khan.
No! No, you gave me his life, and I have spared it.
As you wish.
Request permission to return to duty, sir.
Granted.
Well, that was a good, lively discussion. I think we enjoyed that episode. I enjoyed watching it.
The one thing that I forgot to mention, this is a tiny little thing that stood out to me. In the scene with Worf, where he decides not to kill the kid, he drops the knife on the ground, and that knife is like this awesome ceremonial weapon that looks like it should be really heavy and, you know, has a lot of metaphorical weight to it.
Yeah.
But the sound when he drops it sounds like you dropped your remote control
on
the floor.
Yes, that's exactly what I was... It sounds like you just... When you stand up and it's on your lap...
Exactly.
Like, it just makes like a plasticky clatter on the floor.
Yeah. I was like, man, that thing should be like cha-chunk.
Yes.
But no. Anyway. Didn't have time to do the Foley work on that one, I guess.
I think the never has the sort of serialization been exposed so much where after this whole Civil War thing, right? Worf is just like, can I come back? And Picard says yes, and they walk off.
Yeah.
that's fine. In the next episode, it's as if nothing has changed. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's just mm-hmm. kind of a weird serialization thing. But yeah, I'm going to give Redemption I gave Redemption Part 1 a 3 out of 5. I thought it was perfectly serviceable. I thought this was a more interesting sort of action-y, a lot of shit's going on, really interesting plot lines to explore. My main gripe, as I said, is really just some of the plot lines I feel could deserve their own episode. But I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 5. I think it's a really solid start to what I think is a great season in Season 5.
Yeah, this I'm glad that I watched these two. I know this is just the next episode, but it's been, I think, a couple weeks since we recorded the last one.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. So I haven't watched Redemption Part 1 since before we recorded the last episode. And I'm glad that I hadn't, because I feel like if I had watched these two back-to-back, this episode might not have worked as well for me, because it would have felt like everything they built up in the first half was just sort of like, you know, secondary.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing to look at compared to something like Best of Both Worlds, where arguably that distance hurts you. I don't know. It's something interesting to think about as far as the way that two-parters are structured.
Yes.
And how effective they are.
Where you balance the sort of hinge point is kind of important.
Yeah. But that being said, I would give this a 4 as well. I think this is great. I think it has a lot of plots, but I think that they are fairly balanced.
Yep.
In how much screen time they get. Whether or not that is the way it should be is another question. But I think for what you got there, you're getting a little bit of everything, and it's pretty great. There's a way comic books in the 80s used to be written like this, sort of, where you'd have your main story, but then you'd have stuff happening on the side that would only get like one or two panels, but it would be enough to get you really interested in whatever they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So they could go into it later. And that's kind of like what this feels like. I know they're not going to do that because this isn't a through line story show.
Yeah.
As much as comics or TV now is. But I really like that, where you're spending time with characters, you're getting character stuff. And it all works really well. I think it's, like I said before, I think it's the best handling of multiple plots they've done so far.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I don't know if it's the first episode of the season where they have sort of the most planning time for it. It felt very cinematic in a way a lot of the, like, I don't know if it's a product just of time, but they have a lot of, you can tell in the direction, there's one scene where Worf is celebrating with Kern, and the camera sees him in the distance, and Lursa and Bator enter the front of the frame and turn to each other. So you can mm-hmm. see Worf in the background, but it's like,
oh, yeah.
It's nicely layered. Like things, it clearly wasn't just shot in 6 hours where they're like, we just need all this stuff. Let's get it done. It looked nice. It was a good looking episode.
Yeah.
So, guys, thank you very much for listening. If you're on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. We've been getting a lot of great comments recently, and I really appreciate it. A lot of support, a lot of people now listening, which is very, very nice. Makes everyone feel very, very good. If you're on iTunes, a rating or review is very helpful as well. Clay, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, man. Anytime.
And we're going to be back in a couple of days with Darmok, which my iPhone autocorrects to Daemon or
Wait.
Demon.
Darmok. Darmok on the ocean?
Darmok on the ocean. The greatest rock album of all time. We will see.
The Queensryche follow-up to Redemption 2, Darmok on the Ocean.
It could also be an Adele album, but anyway. Yeah. We will see you guys in a couple days with Darmok.